So you're getting older and things are starting to change with your body, your skin. Oh, let's face it, everything. Well, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Anti-Aging Uncensored, the show for driven women who want real solutions to defy their age. I'm your host, Jill Gilbert, digital health leader and entrepreneur. I'm a self-proclaimed product junkie as well as an overly obsessed fan of anti-aging breakthroughs and cutting-edge health solutions. And I'm going to help you tackle the challenging and oh-so-extraordinary next years of your lives. Now let's dive into the latest episode of Anti-Aging Uncensored. Today we're talking weight loss in your 40s, 50s, and beyond. I know I'm not alone when I say it gets really challenging to lose weight after you turn 40. And after 50, forget about it. It's like we've suddenly lost the gift we had in our 20s and 30s to make just one or two simple diet or exercise changes and see the pounds quickly disappear. Well, if you're like me, you probably think your bodies are just rebelling against you. And I'm from the world of knowledge is power. So I rounded up an expert who's going to help us discover how to begin to fight back. Dr. Orlena Carrick is a pediatrician turned weight loss and health coach who helps women over 40 achieve their ideal lives. Orlena teaches busy women how to effortlessly enjoy healthy eating and living. She is also the author of the book Feeding Toddlers and hosts her own podcast called Fit and Fabulous at 40 and Beyond. Today, Orlena is going to break down the key strategies for tackling weight loss in your 40s, 50s, and beyond. She will also identify the four essential areas to prioritize in order to maintain weight loss, and she'll explain how mindset is half the battle. Let's dive in. Well, welcome, Dr. Orlena Carrick, to the program.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I am excited. This has been a long time topic that I have wanted to cover, and I can't wait. Where are you located?
Well, you may be able to tell from my accent, but I'm from the UK, but I live in Spain, just north of Barcelona, near the Mediterranean. It's quite beautiful here.
Ah, that is lovely. I love Barcelona. The amount of seafood dishes that I found there were like amazing. They were just remarkable, remarkable foods. So perfect for us to talk about today. So I know you are a pediatrician that turned into a weight loss and health coach, correct?
Yes. So I trained in the UK in pediatrics and we moved to Spain around just nearly 10 years ago, actually. And I kind of say I moved with my eyes wide shut, just thinking, you know, that I would move and my career would carry on. It's a long story. It didn't quite work out like that. And I moved into the online space. And now I think of myself as a doctor before you need a doctor. So I help you avoid ever needing going to the doctor.
Doctor before you need a doctor. That actually is the way medicine's moving forward, which is prevention. That is perfect. You're perfectly poised for the future.
I like to think so. And, you know, I think one of the things when I was working was you see so many people with lifestyle diseases, and we're going to dive into that a little bit now. But it is kind of heartbreaking. And you almost want to be able to say, I wish we could just go back 20 years and sort this out. And that's now what I'm doing. But obviously people need to be able to see it, because otherwise they just think, why should I do this? Because obviously you can't look into the future and see, but we will find out more as we carry on chatting.
Well, I struggle with this, as do many. I know there are a ton of women who start struggling in their 40s with sort of slowing down of, you know, they say it's the metabolism, but slowing down of the ability to lose weight. And now in our 50s, it seriously almost feels impossible. And I was thinking back on the diets that used to work for me that don't work anymore. It's very different. I mean, I went kind of extreme at times with, you know, cabbage soup diet and things like that. But I'm curious, what is going on with our bodies in our 40s and 50s that's causing all of this?
Well, it is just getting older, essentially. And it's kind of this melting pot. I know we've got menopause, and we're going to talk a little bit about menopause. A lot of people like to say, oh, it's the menopause. Well, I think really and truly, the menopause is one of those factors But it is just aging. I like to look back on my 20s and think, you know, I was the world's most unfit kind of person. I was a bit of an exercise phobe. But I could, you know, get up after basically partying all night and go and play football and run around a football pitch. You know, it's that strength of youth, you know, and you've got those muscles, which are still young. They still work really, really well. Whereas when we get beyond our 40s, we really have to work at it a bit more. And for many reasons, but basically it is our bodies getting older in terms of everything, our muscles, metabolism, hormones, legs, bones, just everything, just sadly, you know, getting a little bit older.
So menopause absolutely plays a role in the difficulty to lose weight.
Well, it's a little bit controversial, actually. And you will hear people saying, oh, well, there's no studies that clinically show that. But I think if we're being really, what's the word I'm looking for? My brain has lost.
Honest with ourselves?
Yes. I think we know that menopause kind of, it does have hormonal changes. I mean, the other big thing that we notice as we're getting older are other hormonal changes. So for example, hypothyroidism is something that is more likely to happen to women in their 40s and 50s than it is. I mean, obviously younger women get it as too, but you're going to see it later on in life. So you've got this sort of melting pot of everything happening, including lack of energy a little bit, not sleeping so well, and us not being able to take it. On top of that, you've got menopause as well. And so, as I say, slightly controversial, but really and truly, I'm going to go with yes.
Yes. So you mentioned hyperthyroidism. I've actually thought, well, I haven't thought in depth about this, but I did think that that was just something that was genetic or was something that you were born with. So you're saying you can actually develop it, like you develop a new allergy later on in life?
Yes, absolutely. So yes, you're right. Like most complex illnesses, there are genetic predispositions. So you can be born with it later on, earlier on, and you can develop it later on in life. And there's you're getting out of my comfort zone a little bit here as a pediatric doctor, because that's not really what I specialized in.
Right,
give me
right,
someone
right.
who's under 18 and I'll tell you. But the reality is there are lots of different types of hypothyroidism and lots of different causes for hyperthyroidism, but you see a cluster of it in your 40s and 50s. And that's normally what we call autoimmune. You know, that's when your body starts to, its immune system starts to attack cells that you don't really want to be attacked. It's a little bit over enthusiastic and starts taking out things that we really want to be using.
It's really interesting because I think it's deeper than just a calorie in, calorie out. So I'm curious, we're talking about effects of weight and how difficult weight is to lose as we get a little bit older. I did a podcast with Dr. Dave Alpert. It was really interesting around heart health and heart disease. For those of you listening, if you have a chance to go back and listen, it's episode 2. And he woke us up big time to the grim realities, depressing, of heart disease and as the number one killer of women. So I am interested in your views on how weight can impact our health. Like, how have you seen it manifest of, and I should say excess weight?
Yeah, so I help women lose weight. And for me, the reason to lose weight is for the health benefits. So what I'm really about is leading a long and healthy life. And if you look at the things that you need to do to lead a long and healthy life, and I've got my four pillars, my system of my four pillars, and I know we're going to talk about that and break it down a little bit more. But the bottom line is that if you're overweight or significantly overweight, let's go with significantly overweight, you are not, there's something out of whack there. You haven't been leading that healthy life and your body is at risk of more things. So diabetes is the big one. And obviously that's connected with heart disease and all those nasty things. And even to some extent, cancers. Some cancers are linked to weight as well. So there's so, I mean, the flip side of it is this, if you lead a healthy life, there's actually so many nasty diseases that you can avoid. And even when you're diagnosed with things like diabetes, there are so many things that you can do to reduce the consequence of your diagnosis. So I like to focus on the positive. I know we want to be aware of those nasty, horrible diseases, and that's part of the reason for thinking about it. But the flip side is, hey, do you know what? If I lead this healthy life, then I can lead a long and healthy life. And not only can it be long, but healthy in terms of not having disease, but also healthy in terms of being fit and doing the things that I want to do. So having that movement, having that ability to run after my child or catch a train and all those other things that we want to do, the freedom to do what we want to do.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there, because it's true. I tend to, being from the health background and technology, it's always, you know, solving the problem of the dire need versus looking at the positive of what these things can provide to you. So we started talking briefly about, you know, your four pillars, your essential areas that we need to prioritize. So let's dive into each of them. Can we start with nutrition?
Yes, we can. So just so that I get them over and explain the sort of umbrella, as it were. So the first one is nutrition. The second is sleep. Sorry, the second is exercise. The third is sleep. And the fourth one is mindset and emotions. And I think that's the foundation that ties all of them together. So nutrition is really interesting. And one of those areas that can be a little bit mind-boggling. If you want to lose weight, it's 80% nutrition. In terms of, if you want to lose weight, you need to make some changes to your diet. And, you know, you mentioned calories in, calories out. On one level, it's more complicated than calories in, calories out. And I don't teach people to count calories, because I think it's not a great way of doing things. It's just not clear. It's not complicated. But actually, it is a really easy tool for us to be able to understand how things work. It does basically boil down to calories in, calories out on a physiological level, mm-hmm. although it's difficult to actually measure that, which is partly why I don't teach that. So what is a healthy diet? And again, so much controversy, but you can just sum it up to really quick and easy things that we all know. Eat lots of vegetables and stop the junk. And if we stop that podcast there and you walked away with that message, I would feel that I had made a difference in your life, because it is that easy. But I can go in deeper if you want me to.
Yeah. Well, I actually am. There's so many questions I have around nutrition, and I selfishly, so many apply to me, which is the difficulty we have in prioritizing this, and what is holding us back from making the changes and the adjustments that we need.
Oh, well, that is another of my favorite topics. And that is really my fifth pillar, which is routines, systems, and habits. And it all boils down to habits. It's all about habits. But first of all, let me dive a little bit deeper into nutrition. And
yes,
I live by the Mediterranean. What I love is the Mediterranean style diet. Now, I don't love the Mediterranean style diet just because I live 4 minutes from the Mediterranean and like to go swimming every single day in the summer, and the water is crystal clear and it's beautiful. The reason I like the Mediterranean style diet, and just to be clear, it's not a diet, it's like a way of eating, is really that it has more research in it than other ways of eating. But to be perfectly honest, if you look at any of the research that says, oh, you know, should we eat vegan to have a long and healthy diet life, or should we do this? They all have this common theme of lots of vegetables and whole grains. You know, there's this, if you concentrate on the things that they all have in common, this is what comes up time and time again: vegetables, whole grain, think about lentils and legumes, think about nuts and seeds, think about good fat. So there's different types of good fats. Coming from Spain, I recommend extra virgin olive oil. If you don't like it, there are others. But, you know, I do think it has health benefits that others don't have. We all need a little bit of protein. We don't need heaps of protein. From a health point of view, I would say meat, red meat particularly, is not a healthy thing to be eating. Perhaps a little bit of fish. there is a question mark in my mind about whether we need to go totally vegan or not. Mm-hmm. And you will hear different experts on both sides of the field. But the bottom line is, you know, a little bit of protein, a little bit of animal products, rather than lots and lots of it. And moving away from those refined, what I call white carbohydrates. And people get a little bit confused here because you see people saying, I'm going on a low carbohydrate diet. And then they post all these photographs of vegetables. And you're like, what do you think the vegetables
are? Yeah, exactly.
So it's about replacing those white refined carbohydrates with carbohydrates that are full of fiber, which are full of good nutrients, full of vitamins and minerals and antioxidants, and also really help our biome. And this is another area that we're seeing, which is really super interesting, which has really been coming out in the last 20 years, is, you know, what is our biome? All of those exciting things that we have in our gut that live next to us. In fact, you know, we're like 49% bugs as opposed to 100% human. We have this symbiotic relationship with these interesting things inside us. And the more fiber we eat, basically, the better for them as well. And they will do things like, you know, eat certain bits of your food. So when you have that skinny friend who can eat all manner of junk and you think, how do you do it? One of the reasons may be that they have different microorganisms in their gut and they're metabolizing things in a different way. And I think this is another reason why that calories in, calories out idea can become a little bit complicated, because what are you metabolizing and what are they metabolizing? And it's not really very clear and there's no way of really measuring it. But in a nutshell, as I say, more vegetables, less junk food. And if you can take that away, then you've done really well.
We all basically know what to eat. And yet we prepare, I guess, or serve up the foods that make us want to have them. Do you think there is a sacrifice up front that we need to make to get to a place of joy with our food?
I don't think there's a sacrifice that you have to make, but I do think that you have to be open to making changes, because the bottom line is this. When we talk about habits, habits are really interesting. And habits are basically, we have this different parts of our brains. We've got our prefrontal cortex, which is thinking part of our brain, and it uses a lot of energy. And that's the one that goes, hey, we're going to give up chocolate for a month because it's good for us and chocolate is bad. And then we've got like the rest of our brain, which we're going to call habit brain. And it goes, I like chocolate. We go into a garage, we buy chocolate. That's what we do. And we have these different parts of our brain. And we'd like to think that we are our thinking brain. And it's not true. We're all of our brain. But the habit brain is so unseen that we don't see it. We just do things without thinking. And that's a double edge of a sword, because it doesn't, your habit brain doesn't care whether it's a good habit or a bad habit. It's only your thinking part of your brain that cares about that. So it doesn't matter to your habit brain whether you're getting up and going for a run or whether you're eating cookies every single day. It's a habit and it's just happy doing a habit. Now, the great thing about this is that when you can automate things and get to that stage where all the healthy habits are on autopilot, it's like you've said, all that stuff that's annoying me, that's thinking, what should I cook my kids for dinner? Or how do I solve this problem of losing weight? If you could sell that to somebody, you could get a virtual assistant to come and do it for you, your life would be amazing. You'd free yourself up to do all of these things.
Yes.
You can do that. And it's called your habit brain. You've got it. But the issue is you have to get from A to B across what I call the wobbly bridge. And the problem with the wobbly bridge is where you're sitting now, you've got all these habits made up and your thinking brain is going, we're going to change our habits. All I have to do is repeat, repeat, repeat. That's not entirely true, but that's what your brain says. Repeat, repeat, repeat. I'll do this. And then you hit a stumbling block and your old habits, the ones that are still the habits, are saying, oh no, we're going back here. And it can be difficult to change your habits. And your habit is only a habit when it is that thing that you do when 2020 hits, essentially, when everything goes wrong. In the UK, I don't know whether you say this, we say, when it's gone Pete Tong, it's what you do. So in 2020, when the world went crazy and our lives were thrown upside down, did you eat vegetables all the time? Because that's what you were used to. or did you eat something else? And that's showing what your true habit is. But when you can get to, my true habit is eating vegetables, that's when you're good. You just do it.
I love the habit brain. That is such, that's so great. I've never heard that. Well, let's move on to pillar number two, which is also probably run by habit brain, but let's talk about it.
All four of the pillars are run by habit brain. And just to backtrack as well. They are. And I think the other reason that, you know, you ask, well, why don't we make these changes? And it's partly habit. It's also habit in the way that we're thinking about things as well. Because, you know, you might just have a cookie. So for example, take a digestive biscuit. Do you have digestive biscuits where you are?
No.
They're just like plain biscuits. They have 71 calories in them. Now, I'm, you know, as I say, I don't teach calories. But in order to burn a kilogram of fat, you need to burn 7,700 calories. That's roughly 110 cookies. So say you eat two cookies a day. In 2 months, if you stop eating those cookies and do nothing else and keep everything the same, if you're plateauing before that and you just make that change, you will lose a kilogram of weight. But we don't think of it like that. We think, oh, it's just a cookie. I like cookies. It's nothing. It's just such a small thing. And we don't see that other picture, which is, if I make this small change, I actually get a big reward at the end of it. So yeah, habits in all of them. So yes, totally, habits in exercise. And exercise helps you lose weight, but it isn't the key to losing weight. And I think a lot of people get this back to front because they go, oh, right, I need to lose weight. I'm going to exercise a lot. Well, I guess there is an area where I would say exercise is really where you want to focus. And that's somebody who's really done a lot of the dietary work, made a lot of changes, and they're not seeing changes. And then I would say, look, you need to increase your exercise a little bit. But exercise is really the key to having lots of energy. Exercise gives you energy. People say, I'm too tired to exercise. And I say, no, you've got it wrong. When you're feeling tired, go and exercise and you will feel amazing afterwards.
Now, that's a good point.
Yeah. And so when you've built it into your routine and you just do it on autopilot because that's what you do, you have that nugget of it gives me energy. When I get grumpy, my husband sends me to the swimming pool. He's like, can you just go, or to the sea? Can you just go and do a swim, please? But it's, you know, it has loads of health benefits as well. It's good for your bones. It's good for your heart. It's good for your muscles. It helps you feel good. It's part of a long and healthy life. And if you're thinking about a long and healthy life, essentially the more exercise you can do, the better. Now, obviously there are some people who are exercise freaks. You don't have to be an exercise freak, but the biggest jump you get is if you have a very sedentary life, and it's very easy to have a very sedentary life.
Easy. These days. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, even before we all were sat at home, you know, you drive to your car, you drive in your car to work and you sit down at work. It's very easy not to do any movement. The flip side is it is also easy to do a reasonable amount of movement. But if you go from that sedentary lifestyle to doing a little bit of exercise every day, you've got the sort of biggest buck. You've made the biggest change. And on top of that, you can get more benefits, but the benefits are a little bit less. So if you aren't doing anything, I would urge you, just go and do a 10, 15 minute walk. Create that habit of doing your 10, 15 minute walk and then turn it into a 20 or 30 minute walk. It doesn't have to be heaps and heaps, but doing some exercise is better than no exercise, and enjoy it as well. It's supposed to be fun, so find something that you love.
Hey there, it's Jill with a quick break from the conversation. Do you women feel like your body is starting to rebel and you're just aching to take back control again? For years, you've given so much to so many, and somehow parts of you just got lost in the mix. I know this because that's how it was for me. Well, it's time for you to make your comeback. You heard me right. That's why I wrote a 5-step blueprint for how to start living your best years from this day forward. It's called Wicked, Ageless, and Doing Epic Shit. And you can download your own free copy today by visiting wickedawesomeyou.com/ebook. And now let's get back to the show. I think that's really important. And one of the things that I learned just in my own research was I kept waiting for motivation to happen. Like, and I would sit in my bed and in the morning and go, okay, you know what? I'm going to give 5 more minutes. Maybe the motivation will kick in. And then, you know, 20 minutes later, I'm like, it's still not there. And then I realized what am I waiting for? That it's never gonna happen. I will never be motivated to do this. So I realized that it wasn't something that I needed to be motivated to do. I just needed to do it. And that was a mind shift, I guess, change in how I approach it, which is for a while, at least until I felt better about doing it, that it was something I had to layer into my day.
Yeah, I think the reality is if you're not very fit or if you're going to try and do something new, you've got that wobbly bridge again you have to go through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, it's about building habits and that getting started. It's like my kids with their homework. I've got twins who are 8 and my daughter, she will get up on Saturday morning. She'll be down at the table at 7 o'clock. By 7:30, she's finished her homework. Her brother, oh my goodness, the agony of his homework. And, you know, he's not someone who's going to go, I'm going to do it all in one. He has to do every little bit. It's that starting bit, you know. And once he's started, he's absolutely fine. And it's the same with anything. And so I think, you know, if you want to start running, start walking first. Start getting into the habit of walking. You can walk. And if you want to start running and you think, well, I end up walking, that's no big deal. Walking is better than nothing. So, you know, I think it's the other way around. The doing it creates the motivation to do it.
That's great. That's great advice. So let's move on to your third pillar, which is sleep.
Yeah, sleep is super. There's so much interesting research about sleep. So I have to confess, it was a very long time ago that I went to medical school. And when I did, we didn't really understand that much about sleep. Obviously, we know sleep is good for us when you do the repairing and, you know, if you don't get enough sleep, I don't know about you, but I turn into an angry bear. So we know that sleep is good for us on some level, but now they really understand more about the science behind sleeping and exactly what's going on. But the bottom line is it's good for us. It's good for our health. So lack of sleep is linked to things like Alzheimer's disease. It's good for productivity, despite what people think, you know, that burning the midnight oil and I just have to stay up and do these things. Actually, you're much better off getting 8 hours sleep, getting up and doing the things early in the morning and being productive. And it's also good for weight loss as well. So there's different reasons for that. Part of it's to do with your cortisol levels. And, you know, part of it is that you feel more hungry when you're tired. I don't know about you. I remember having this awful sleepless night when my children were little. And one of my oldest kids at breakfast handed me a bowl of porridge, which I think you guys call oatmeal. And they hadn't finished it. And I just sort of started eating it automatically and then thought, what on earth am I doing? Why am I eating more than I want? I've had my breakfast. And that kind of, oh, I'm just going to eat it, sort of feels like wrapping a blanket around you just because you're tired. But you know that when you're not tired, you're full of energy. You want to go and do other things. So you eat and sort of move on.
Yeah, I think I have been made aware over the last 3 or 4 years how critical a good night's sleep is, and not just sort of doing the motions, but actually getting sleep. And I think my sleep has changed as I've gotten older. Yeah. Have you seen that with your clients?
Well, I was going to say that's another reason why menopause is connected with weight gain as well, because a lot of people who go through, when they go through menopause, it affects their sleep pattern. So that's a reason why there can be a connection between sleep and weight gain and menopause. But yeah, and there is also this myth that I see that people say, well, when you get older, you only need 5 or 6 hours sleep. And that's not true. You still want to get 7 or 8 hours sleep. But I do think, different people's sleep changes in different ways. And again, it's all about habit. I know I'm in the habit of going on about habits. It is just about habit. So, you know, you want to make sure that you set a regular bedtime and a regular getting up time and you stick to that every single day if you can, which is probably easier now in times of lockdown because we're not going out and partying all the time. But again, you can get into habits of bad sleeping, and there are things that you can do to remedy those. But obviously, if you get into a habit of bad sleep and you don't remedy it, you're going to carry on having that bad sleep. So I wonder if that contributes to people as they get older not having good sleep.
Yeah, I I don't know. I noticed that when things are crazy going on, I tend to like all the politics and the news cycles and, you know, the COVID numbers and things like that, I tended to have a much more stressful sleep. But I've just noticed even within the last year that I'm move a lot more. Something about that I'm not going through, you know, hot flashes yet, but I definitely think there's something with getting older around it, and need to do a whole podcast around it.
Well, that brings us nicely on to pillar number four, which is emotions, yes, and wellness. So that whole idea of, you know, when things are going bad and, you know, getting into those thoughts which ruminate and then you lie awake. And, you know, that is basically emotions and mindfulness and emotional wellness. And it's a fascinating topic and one that we spend hours and hours talking, yeah, about. But I think, you know, one of the things I would say is emotions are things that we create in our brain. That doesn't mean that they don't exist. Obviously, they exist, but they are amazing. And they lead us to act on a certain way. But we don't have to act on that certain way. You know, when you feel an emotion, I'll say there's three things you can do. You can act on it. So if it's anger, you can, you know, scream, shout, throw things around, do whatever it is you want to do. You can distract yourself from it. And sometimes distracting yourself isn't a bad option. You know, you might exercise to distract yourself from a bad experience. The reality is that we distract ourselves an awful lot, and we use things like emotional eating, you know, shopping, being on the internet, all of these kind of things instead of actually feeling the emotion. And the third thing you can do is just feel that emotion, which sounds very easy, but it's not actually so easy to do. Just allow it to settle. And, you know, that depends on how long it's going to take. If it's my 8-year-old son and he has an emotion, it starts really super quickly and it might last 10, 15 minutes and disappear. But it is possible to, what I say, spiral into that negative plug hole. So, you know, you have these thoughts and they create emotions, and then you have actions which create new thoughts, and you go round and round and round. So, you know, you thinking about, oh my goodness, the world is, you know, all the COVID cases and things that are going on. And that can lead you down what I call the negative plug hole, going down and down and down. And what you really want to be doing is going, okay, stop. And then you have different tools that can help you stop and do that. And you want to be spiraling up and creating positive thoughts and, you know, positive actions, which would be, I'm going to go for a walk instead of eating the cookie. Mm-hmm. And you can spiral up and up. And I would just also add, it's not, the idea isn't, oh my goodness, I want to live in the land of fairies and unicorns and always be happy. It's not about that. It's about feeling your emotions, but not allowing them to spiral out of control. Obviously, we've had a shocking year. It's been, no one has been left unaffected. But it's made worse if you spend all that time thinking about it and then allow that to have negative actions and more negative thoughts and allow it to spiral down rather than spiraling up.
I know you teach a lot of this to women, and I wanted to, is there one practice that you could give us to help us sort of stop the spiral? You mentioned a couple things like doing something else, but is there like a daily ritual or practice that we could start layering into our own days to help us gain some more even keel thinking around all the negative talk?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first step to any of these changes, whatever your habit changes, is self-awareness. And that's really big key. And I would say, you know, if you want to make changes in these four areas, you don't want to be doing all four pillars at once, because it's just a little bit much. I would add a caveat to that. Obviously, if you get yourself a health coach, then, or, you know, in seriousness, if you are getting a coach and you're working with somebody and they're doing it in a systematic way and evaluating where you are, then you can get through these changes more quickly. If you're at home doing it by yourself, you want to be making one change, and you could make it to any of those four pillars. In fact, I'm having a challenge, a habit changing habit, at the end of April. So I will have to invite you when I do that.
Please do.
Yes, definitely. But so I think self-awareness is the biggest thing. And if you're thinking about thoughts, you want to have a look at journaling. I mean, there's different people have different tools. So different, you know, some people you say journaling and people are like, oh my goodness, don't make me journal. Some people love journal, but to journal. But if you have a look at those thoughts and you get them onto paper, and then you can be objective about them and think, okay, well, how can I reframe this? Or how can I look at this in a different way? So for example, people who have problems with body image, they might go, I hate my body. It's ugly, I'm fat, I feel disgusting. And then you can start to look at the more positive sides. Okay, you're not going to get to, I love my body instantly, but you might think, well, my body has uses. I've got arms and legs. I can do things like walking and think of all the good things I can do. I've got eyes that I can see with. And so it's about reframing it in a different way. And I think there's different ways that you can get to that self-awareness, but you just need to keep questioning yourself and questioning yourself. And one practice that I would say is very useful, whether you're a mother of children or just in your daily life, is breathing. And, you know, in that moment when things are going badly, you catch yourself with those bad thoughts. For me, it's my children having tantrums or shouting or screaming, and that makes me want to shout and scream at them. But if you just practice what I call stop, drop, and breathe, and just focus on your breathing, and I teach my kids to do the same, then it really helps. But you can't do that when you're feeling angry or triggered. You have to practice that on a daily basis and train yourself, get into the habit of doing it. And then when you need it, it will be useful and you can do it. But if I just go, oh, I'm going to be angry and then I'm going to breathe. No, I'm going to be angry and I'm just going to carry on being angry. And I'm going to go, I don't want to breathe. Or as my kids say, Mom, I am breathing. Look.
Yeah, I think the breathing is amazingly important. I've been using it with my son a lot. And it was actually scaring me because now he breathes all day long going, like I hear the whole, like, the like deep little breathing, and I'm like, are you okay? So all day long, I keep saying, are you okay? Are you okay? Because he keeps deep breathing, but I'm like, it's better to have that habit than not. So tell us a little bit about your, I saw you have a 5-day mindset challenge. Is that what you were talking about in April, or is that something you're offering now?
No. So the mindset challenge is something that I've done in the past. So you can still sign up for it. And, go through it. It's sort of automated now. And that just walks you through some of the things that you need to think about before you want to make changes. So thinking about, I have to confess, I haven't done that. I haven't seen what the videos say, but you know, it's thinking about, well, where do you want to get to? What do you have to do to get there? And how are you actually going to get it? So a bit of that mindset work that you need to think about before you do that. So the challenge I'm doing in April, it's going to be touching on similar stuff. It's going to be a bit longer and a bit more in depth. Mm-hmm. And it's going to go through all of these things. So there'll be 5 days of challenge. And the idea, it's called the Healthy You, Healthy Family Habit Challenge. So the Healthy You, Healthy Family is my signature course that I do, my group course that I do. Mm-hmm. And it will be a little taste of that, with the idea that you can build up one habit. So going back to that idea that if you can walk away with the foundation of one habit from that challenge, even if it's a small one, it feels like something small, but you've made a change that is worthwhile and you know, it's going to make a big difference in the future.
That sounds exciting. Are you going to have a wait list for this, or a list that we can sign up?
I will. The page isn't ready yet. I'm busy working on it. But as soon as it's ready, I will send it to you.
Excellent.
I will put you on the waiting list.
Okay, excellent. Well, we're going to make sure that that link to that list so people can sign up is available on our show notes as soon as it's made available to the public. And I think it sounds great. It's something, habits or rituals, for me, I think about them as daily rituals that we can build into our life is critical. And it's when we let those slide and stop sort of, I guess, making them a priority is kind of when we sort of fall off the wagon, as they say here. So this has been really, really interesting. I have one last question, and If you were to look back and look at your younger self and speak to her, what would you tell her in regards to her future health?
I think, you know, I find this interesting, this question so interesting. And I think I would just say to my younger self, just carry on the way you're doing. And, you know, I look back and it wasn't that I was unhealthy. I did things that I think you can get away with when you're young. So staying out late, drinking far more alcohol than was good for me. But if you do it in your 20s, not that I'm advocating doing it in your 20s, but then if you change, you've got time to change and reap all those benefits. And so I really enjoyed my 20s and I enjoyed everything I was doing. And I actually ate reasonably healthily when I was in my 20s. So I think I would just say, carry on, have a good time and really enjoy it.
Yeah, you can always fix something later, right? It's true.
That isn't the message that I should say, but I think that's honestly what I would say to myself. Well, to be honest, I wouldn't have listened to anything else anyhow.
That is awesome. I actually really like that because I enjoyed myself too. I loved it. There were probably some things I would have started to wanted to hear myself, you know, what my urges were, but man, I love looking back on those years. So how can people find you?
Well, thank you for asking. So I have my podcast, which is Fit and Fabulous at 40 and Beyond. And my website is Dr. Orlena. So that's drorlena.com.
Excellent. And are you also social media?
I do have social media. Oh my goodness. I have to confess, I don't know what my social media handles are.
We'll put it in the show notes. Don't worry. No worries. Well, I can't thank you enough. I think it would be really, really fun to get a lot of women signed up for your challenge in April. And hopefully we'll be starting to see some bright horizons out there of positive news and news cycle and all of that. So it'll all coincide together. I cannot thank you enough, Orlena. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Orlena, for helping us gain some great insight on what's happening with our bodies and what we can do to take back control when it comes to weight loss. If you want to connect with Orlena or check out the program she has to offer, you can find her at drorlena.com or on Facebook at orlena.carrick. You can also listen to her podcast, Fit and Fabulous at 40 and Beyond, on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you've heard today, tap the subscribe button so you don't miss any of the incredible topics we have coming up for you. No doubt they'll help you discover the best ways to put yourself in control of your health, wellness, beauty, and more. I'm Jill Gilbert, your host. See you back here next week at Anti-Aging Uncensored.